All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to stick to resources, but now more so in the energy sector, as I am chatting with Joseph Schacher, the founder and editor of the Schacher Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy, which is a free report that really just breaks down the news out of the energy sector and the company and the sector fundamentals in terms of data that does drive these markets that I do think we should pay attention to. The Schacher Energy Report is where Joseph dives a bit more into some of the companies that he likes and is investing in. Joseph, let's start off big picture, general question regarding oil. We still have crude holding above $70 a barrel. And in all fairness, there's still a lot of bearish comments, a lot of people waiting for a pullback in oil, but oil just continues to, I guess, weather a lot of those bearish calls and hang up at these generally higher levels than what we've seen over the last couple of years. Joseph, what do you think? When are we going to finally get that correction, or have we gone on long enough that maybe the next leg is up higher for oil?
Okay, what I see is happening is there's a tug of war. The bulls are running around saying demand is growing. U.S. Demand this week was 20.8 million, 20.75, up for 180,000 from a week ago, and it's equal to where it was in June of 2019. So we're effectively back to U.S. demand being equal to what it was pre-pandemic. The interesting thing was jet fuel, because people are flying much more. A year ago, it was only 805,000 barrels a day on average. It's now up to 1.58 million barrels a day and up 326,000 just in the week, and we are now above where we were pre-pandemic. So if you look at some of the data from the U.S. government on the number of people flying and stuff like that, they're back to it. So that's the bullish side there. Europe is reopening. So everybody's looking at this reopening trade and saying that, you know, we've got all this growth in demand. And yes, OPEC is raising production, you know, by small amounts over, you know, each of the periods. You know, they'll be due 700,000 this month and 840,000 next month. Russia is saying, why don't we add another 500,000 in July, because the demand is there. So there's the growth side of it is where people are looking at, and that's getting the main focus, and that's why we're sitting in the $73-$74 a barrel range, WTI. Now, on the bearish side of it, you have the talks that are going on in Vienna for Iran, and Iran is potentially you know, going to receive sanction relief if they sign up on that UN nuclear agreement and control of their program to upgrade their uranium. If that gets approved, and they're hoping that it happens before the new president gets sworn into office in early August, so they're saying that if something goes wrong with it, he can blame his predecessor. If it goes well, he can take credit for it. And they've already negotiated over 1,000 items of sanction relief. So they're very close. My expectation is we'll get an announcement in July. And that'll bring on 1.5 to 2 million barrels a day before year end. And Iran has built over the last year or two a pipeline system that goes to the, in the Straits of Hormuz, but goes down to the Gulf of Oman. So it's away from the straits and is easier to ship to Asia. They've also increased their storage to 200 million barrels on the coast, and 200 million barrels available for sale, and 80 million barrels of that are on the sea, with a large portion of that in Singapore. So the minute they get the go-ahead, they will increase production, and that I think will take the amount of balance between, let's say, maybe balanced or equal demand and supply, you know, with what OPEC's planning to do, to a point where we have a surplus. The other thing is, with these high prices, you're having demand destruction to some extent, because people are saying these prices are, you know, very, very high, And so they're not going to want to drive after the summer driving season. That's going to be a limiting factor. And the third issue is the U.S. side is coming back on. At the low, we were 9.7 million barrels after the pandemic hit and the industry shut down with those, you know, extremely low prices. If you remember April, we had negative pricing for a short while there. And now you've got 11.1 million barrels, so you're up 1.4 million barrels from the low. And the amount of drilling activity has picked up significantly in the United States, both for oil and natural gas. We're going to see maybe another 500,000 barrels come on if we keep over $60 a barrel before year end. So I think with Iran and U.S. new production, we're going to end up seeing a surplus. Once you start seeing increasing in the weekly commercial inventory stocks in the States, if you remember this week, we had a decline of over 7 million barrels. That was what, pushed prices up again. Once we start seeing an increase, which we should start seeing after the end of the summer driving season, that will cool things off. So my view is we're overbought. We're going to stay overbought until we hear about Iran being done. Then how quickly Iran comes on will have some impact on it. And then we'll be watching the weekly U.S. data. But I think sometime during Q3, we're going to see a correction. Is it going to be just to 60 or is it going to be to the 50s and low 50s? That's going to be the issue. And it'll be based on what OPEC does with increasing supply on their own. When does Iran come on and how quickly those big volumes come on? And how quickly the U.S. comes on. I think the direction is going to be down. I think the price where we are right now, remember thinking about this, right now demand is about 96, 96.5 million barrels per day, and we're at $73 U.S. WTI, and yet in January of 2020, pre-pandemic, demand was 100 million barrels, and we were only 62. So the numbers just don't make sense where we are. They're there because of MEM investors who've been buying $100 call options both for 21 and 2022. Also, you've had hedge funds going aggressively into all commodities, copper, lumber, all of them. And we've had corrections already in lumber. We've had corrections in copper. We're having corrections in some of them, some of the foods as well, cattle and grains. So I think we're starting to see a cool-off in the ones that led the rally in commodities. Laggard was energy, and so I think we're going to see a pullback. The one holding thing back on the energy side is natural gas is probably going to have a very good summer because the U.S. Inventories of water for hydro are very low because of the drought conditions, and so the electricity needs for summer air conditioning, especially with the very hot weather you're seeing on the south and the west, that's going to cause an increase in demand for natural gas. So natural gas prices are in the 320, 330 range for the U.S. NYMEX price, and the Canadian AECO price is very similar. That's all positive for natural gas. So if we do see a bit of a correction in oil, it won't come down until after we get through the heat waves. And also remember, hurricane season is a big part of the issue for the U.S. Industry. So I think we're going to see that today, for example, NatGas NYMEX is up 8 cents to $3.42 an MCF. So they're very, very attractive pricing on the natural gas side. And so natural gas stocks have done better both in Canada and the United States than the oily names have.
Okay. Now, before we get into the stocks, one more quick question is that you pointed out the fact that, look, commodities broadly have pulled back, but oil has not. Energy has not. But there are still a lot of these headwinds that you are seeing. Why has the oil sector been able to withstand the general pullback in commodities? Is it simply because the demand side has picked up that much?
Well, the demand side has picked up from, let's say, 92 million in Q1 to the 96, 96.5 now. It may get in the summertime. Remember, the summer driving season hasn't really started until we get past the July long weekend. That may take it to 97, 97.5. But once we get past September long weekend, that demand is going to fall by about 2 million barrels a day. And if that's when Iran comes on with new production and the U.S. brings on new production, that's when the glut will appear and commercial inventories will start growing. And that's when I think we'll see the pullback in it. Right now, it's all like meme investing. You know, you think about AMC and GameStop and BlackBerry and all these companies. The companies themselves say the fundamentals don't justify their stocks. So AMC is selling paper. GameStop is selling paper. I'm surprised we haven't seen BlackBerry do that too. But the reality is, when you have these meme and momentum investors, fundamentals don't matter. It's just the latest news flow plus the crowd funding and chasing stocks. You know, we saw, I think it was 2 weeks ago, they decided Wendy's was going to be a buy for some reason. And the stock went up 20% in a day. And then the day next day, they walked away and came right back down. So, you know, you never know where this horrid investing is going to go. But right now, they're supporting energy, both WTI and natural gas. Natural gas, I think they're justified because of course, the hot weather and the lack of, the ability of hydro to meet the electricity needs during the summertime. But in the case of oil, I think it's way overvalued based on, the macro numbers that I mentioned to you. We were, 100, 101 in January of 2020, and now we're only 96 to 96 and a half, and yet the price has gone from, 62 to 73. So the numbers just don't make sense for being here, but speculative money flows have driven it to these levels.
Well, Joseph, absolutely. The speculative money flows have chased those meme stocks higher, as well as the energy space in a number of sectors. But I've got kind of a two-part question I would like to ask you, and it's around the oil stocks and the oil and gas stocks. There's the three different categories of the producers, the explorers and developers, and then the oil services companies. So I would just like to ask you, based on where prices are at now, if they were to hang in the 70s, let's say, where would your interest be? Where do you see the growth is? And then the second part of that would be, if we do get the correction that many are anticipating, including yourself, that we do pull back down into the 60s, maybe the 50s, which areas would you be most interested in looking at as far as picking up positions? Would it be the producers, the explorers and developers, or would it be in the oil services side of things?
Well, there's not really many explorers in Canada. You know, the Montney play is a development play, and again, the industry there is being very careful on bringing on excess supply. So the only explorers really are the international ideas, and we cover names like Canacol, Touchstone, Alvopetro, Gran Tierra that are in South America or Trinidad, and that's where there's exploration going on. Domestically, it's all manufacturing plays in the Montney, the Duvernay, and shallower oil plays in southeast Saskatchewan, etc. So what I'm looking at is, I think the value right now, where the stocks still can go further upward, are the natural gas stocks, because if we end up going up another 50 cents or dollar in MCF, that's going to mean cash flows are going to be growing faster for natural gas companies than they will for oil companies. That's number one. Number two, if we do see a correction, I think the ones that are the most levered with balance sheet issues, and so a lot of the oil companies are in that group, and mostly you have a lot of the companies in the energy service sector have very bad balance sheets. And so the leverage, when with everybody seeing the recovery in drilling, the stocks have gone up like crazy. Like if you take Precision Drilling, it's gone from, $7 at the low in March of last year. And we put it on the recommendation list at the time. Well, now we're looking at a $51 stock today. And to me, it's excessively overvalued. If I had any, I would still sell it, but I've gone now. It's made a fabulous return for investors, but it's way overvalued versus where it should be. To me, those are the stocks that are most vulnerable if you take oil down and then past the summertime when the natural gas market slows down because you don't have the summer electricity for air conditioning need. I think you'll see both natural gas and oil cool off during the third quarter, during the shoulder season, after the summer driving season and into November, December, when we start the winter demand season.
Okay. And there's one other idea you mentioned earlier I'd like to circle back around to, Joseph, and that was you mentioned some of the U.S. producers are coming on now that the prices have gotten up in the 60s and 70s. before a lot of the lower prices we saw last year in the $10 to $40 range was too low for some of the fracking companies and even for some of the companies that produce a lot of nat gas. But now that prices have come back in a big way, do you think that we'll see more action in the U.S.? And could it be derailed if we then see that pullback? What are your thoughts on the U.S. Producers, in particular companies that have a higher cost profile coming back in the space?
Yeah, I think if you have a higher cost profile, and then the other side of it is, of course, a balance sheet. If you still have a lot of debt and servicing that debt becomes more problematic if the price of oil backs off and price of natural gas backs off, and if the drilling industry slows down from the growth we've seen, which would happen if you came below 60, and much more, it would slow down even more if we went below 50. So I think that the highest beta stocks in terms of downside risk would be the energy service sector. The only near-term benefit would be if these prices stay up in the 70s and we have these high natural gas prices. You may see more merger mania. I think this morning you saw an announcement where Ensign bought the Canadian operation of Nabors, and so they're because of the recovery in Canada being sharper than the recovery in the States in terms of drilling activity. I can give you the example: the Canadian oil rig count has gone from 75 rigs a year ago to 74. The natural gas rigs from 12 to 43, so that's up 15 times on oil and 3.6 times for gas. If you go to the U.S., the rig count there is up to 470 from 266, up 77%. The oil rig count is up 97% to 373 versus 189. Gas is only up 29%, 97 versus 75. So I would think that this deal that we saw from Ensign just gives Nabors more firepower to stay in the game and pay down debt, and we're going to see somewhat more consolidation, I believe. And we're seeing consolidation a little bit in the service sector, that Ensign deal today, but we're also seeing a lot of consolidation occurring in the oil and natural gas space. Tourmaline making that big acquisition, a week or so ago. Or 2 weeks ago now, and we saw the announcement yesterday by Surge Energy buying out a Southeast Saskatchewan light oil producer, and we saw all the merger mania that we had with Whitecap during late 2020 and early 2021. So there's going to be more of that, I think, as companies go after competitors in the same area, and then they see the efficiencies from running the business together. And smaller private companies saying, let's do this deal because I get public stock. So this private company that the Surge bought will now have, they're putting up 4,000 BOEs a day to the 16,000 that Surge had. So there'll be a 20,000 BOE a day company. But the new shareholders from the private company will own a third of the company, even though they're bringing in only 25% of new production. So the light oil value per BOE is worth more than the value of middle-grade oil, which is what Surge had prior to making this new deal.
Interesting, Joseph. Good chatting with you, as always. A good update here on the energy sector, especially oil. And yeah, oil just continues to hang up there, right? So a couple timelines that we can look to for the next pullback here. But hey, that M&A activity has been very interesting in the sector as well. Joseph, thank you for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please keep all the emails coming, either fleck@kereport.com or email shad@kereport.com. And please go back, listen to all the daily editorials and the company updates that we did this week. There's a lot of content on a relatively slower week, but still, there's a lot of good stuff going on with companies especially. Joseph, thanks as always for your time. Have a great weekend.
Same to you. Take good care.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.